Special number 5868, Hartin Mundi, part 12.
Well, when I came out of hospital again after being wounded on the thumb, I was sent to Sutton Park, Sutton Coalfield, convalescent. Well, now that was a lovely place. I enjoyed it there. There was plenty of food, no parade. And we had a real good time. Well, later, I went before a medical board and examination. They passed me out as unfit for further active service. Well, I was highly delighted. I thought, well, that's about the end of the war for me. But it didn't quite work like that. After a little while, I was sent to Catterick Camp in Yorkshire. Well, now that was an unholy lousy show. It was known then as one of the worst camps in England, and I don't think it's too great today, according to all accounts. Well, that's where I was sent to. Well, now when I got there, it was simply packed with troops, thousands of them, mainly recruits being trained quickly to help fill up the losses on the Somme and so forth. But if you wanted to have a night out at all, you had to go down into Richmond. That's the nearest place, Catterick Camp. And one have a night out, pay night, go down there for a night out. You had to almost queue to get in a pub for a drink. There was a red cap on nearly every corner of the street, so you had to behave yourself. But me, not a mug again, I had to put my foot in it eventually. I was fed up with the thing. And I ended up with a court martial. I upset the colonel just a little bit. And there was nothing really. The only charge was desertion. Forging the colonel's name. Well, that wasn't much, but that was a charge. I never got beyond the railway station, but at the court martial, they were very kind, they always are. And I got away with the desertion charge. I had a good, nice captain, he knew me, and he got me, done me a good job. I got away with the desertion charge, but the forging the colonel's name, that didn't work because he got the pass that I wrote on, but he did say I made a real good job of his signature, so that was it. Now, the result was reduced to the ranks, next draft abroad. I thought, well, again, the examination didn't count. You didn't get another exam, just next draft abroad. Well, that come about. They loaded us up, train load of us one night. Well, I didn't know a soul on that mob that went, not a single one, because previously when I'd gone abroad the other twice I'd got all my mates, pals, but on this occasion I didn't know a soul. I felt all hell, fed up with the tea, and away we went. We got to Southampton, travelled through the night. We got to Southampton, we spent most of the day in the dock. While there was this big vessel, I was loading horses on it when we got there, and we had to wait for that. Then they bundled the whole issue of us onto this ship. And when it began to get dark, away all ready to go, they started pulling up the gangways and the ropes to loose off, and I always remember early in the war when you went abroad, along the docks there'd be women and kids waving flags, a band playing, cheer you on the way, but then there was not a soul on the dock, just an ordinary dock labourer wandering up and down, that's about all there was, nobody there to say good luck, goodbye, kiss your ass, nothing at all, and away we went. Well, now, as soon as we pulled out of the dock, we pulled out a bit, officers came along, and everybody down below, you know, gets down out the way, and anybody seen on top or anywhere smoking, no smoking. I know you've read books. There's a hell of a lot of books been published all about the First War, but because one that's pretty well known is the one they used to publish about the angels and moms and things like that. Well, now, if it was possible and there had been any ghosts up the Solent, blimey, they must have had a marvellous time, because I always remember on this boat, as we pulled out, got out, there was a mob of Welsh chaps, because they were all mates, you see, recruits, and they started singing some of their Welsh songs, such as, I don't know, Land of Me Fathers, and Welcome in the Hills, all that sort of thing. Oh, blimey, that sounded beautiful. I bet that echoed miles along the Solent. I know I should let it wander on quicker, or I shall never get to the prisoner war if I'll keep yapping. We arrived at Le Havre eventually. Well, Le Havre was air main depot for the whole of the British Western Front, and all the shipping went there. Now, just a few words about the shipping. There was troop ships went there, cargo ships, ambulance, hospital ships, even torpedoes there, submarines rather, they went there. Now, I remember earlier on, first time I was wounded up northern France, up Club Street, near Armentières, that way, L60. And the nearest hospital there was the one at Boulogne. And I went there, I was a stretcher case, I went to Boulogne, and a hospital called the Royal Pindy. Well, now, they put you on hospital ship, and you stayed there about a day or so, put on hospital ship, and that was fitted up magnificent. Just like an hospital ward, long hospital ward, beds fitted beautiful. Well, now, the second time I was wounded, I went from Le Havre, the Somme, I expect Le Havre probably nearest to the Somme, and I went from there. Well, the hospital ship I went on, I'm sure it was called the St. Patrick. Well, I was a walking case, being wounded in the arm, shoulder, so I could walk about. Well, I was up on deck when we was coming across in the middle of the night, leaning on the rails, and a nurse came along, asked if I wanted a cigarette. I said yes, and she gave me a packet of Captain cigarettes, always remember that. And we stood chatting, and in the distance we saw some lights, and we stood talking. As it got a bit nearer, she said, "You know what that is?" Oh, blimey. The old witching hour again. Now then, this ship. She said, "You know what that is?" I said, "No, I don't." And when it got nearer, she said, "That hospital ship." And as we got all well within distance, so you could see it clearly, it was a beautiful sight. All round the side of the vessel, all the full length of the vessel, with a wide green line, all lights, green lights, right to the length of the vessel. In the centre of the vessel was a great big red cross. It looked marvellous. And on top of that, the lights of the ship was all lit up on top decks, all lit up. Well, now, when we got close enough, she told me, she said, "That ship," she said, "that's the Mauritania." Well, the Mauritania was one of our largest pre-war passenger ships before the First War. And that, she said, was bringing casualties, wounded home from the Dardanelles, Mesopotamia and the Middle East, that direction. But it was a marvellous sight. One of every other vessel had to be blacked out from top to bottom. But a hospital ship was lit up, you couldn't help but see it. And I never remember all through the First War the Germans ever sinking a hospital ship, never. Well, now I wander back after telling them tales to Le Havre. Well, that wasn't much of a show at all. I didn't like it, and a hell of a lot more didn't like it. I'll tell you for why. The food wasn't much good, but what got up air back was the drilling and training they give us there. But the training that you've made me so mad, it wasn't necessary. You'd had it all in England, all such things as right turn, left turn, a bait turn, all that rubbish, and then arms drills, slope arms, and all that. Oh, hell. Hour after hour they give you that, and it bores you to the I think it was done deliberate, tell you the truth. They used to have a yellow band on her arm. Well, we used to call them yellow bellies, or some of them called them canaries, but that was the best nickname I reckon we give them, yellow bellies, that's what we call the bellies. And they done it nothing, and it deliberately provoked you. And I think it was done so that you'd say, oh, hell, let's get back up the front out of the way. But no, I carried on. Now, I was pretty quick-tempered, but I had a hell of a job. They used to have about 10 or a dozen of you, and the Lance Corporal, he looked after you 10 or a dozen every day. Well then, at the finish, he had us together one day, got us in a ring, and he said, he said, when you get to the trenches at the front, he said, you've got nothing whatever to worry about. You're safe enough, he said, providing you keep your head down. All you want to do is keep your head down, you're quite safe. Not only that, he said, the Germans, he said, they can't shoot straight. He said, you people, he said, you British soldiers, you've been trained, good shots, he said, you're all right, he said, but they can't shoot. I thought, oh, bloody hell. I couldn't stick it no longer, so I said to him, I said, I don't know, I said, but I've been up there twice, I said, they hit me both times. I said, not only that, I said, have you ever been up there? Oh, no, he said. I said, well, you talk like a bloody fool. Oh, dear, you ought to hurt him. He called me every name that began with a B. He told me who all my relations was, and I dared nick him. I couldn't, because if you hit an NCO or an officer on active service, it's the firing squad. Not a cat in hell's chance will stop it. You've got a firing squad if you hit one. And to make matters worse, I weighed about 12 and a half stone, and I ain't swanking, but I was a fairly well-known boxer in the army, so you can tell how I felt. I didn't know what the hell to say to contain myself, but I managed to. And when I called off a little bit, I said, look, I said, now when we go off parade, I said, I'll try to be ever so nice, I said, shall you and I take a nice quiet walk somewhere? Oh, yes, he said. Oh, yes, he said. I thought, oh, hell. That's beautiful. Yes, he said, I'll come. And he did. When we went off parade, me and him walked along, the others were dismissed. And when we go in the camp, I said, look, I said, would you mind just leave your tunic in? I said, leave your tunic in the yard, that'll be all right. Oh, certainly I will, he said. I thought, bloody hell, nothing better. They can't hurt you for it in the private. I thought, blimey, no stripes on his tunic, I'm away. Well, I went on a few more yards and then suddenly it happened. Walked me straight in the guard room. The officer sat there and he knew what was happening. He knew he had it every day. This Lance Corporal, he said, oh, he said, he's been swearing at me on the charge. Put him on charge, he's swearing at me. The bloody officer, he didn't hesitate. 10 days CB. Oh, I never spoke. 10 days CB. Well, that's what I got for that. And that's all I done. Pardon me with a bloody foot. I was quite right. But that went off then. Well, then later, well, I've done this in the first place. I forgot to mention it. When you've been wounded out there in those days, and you was an NCO, you had the right, when you arrived at Le Havre, you had the right to go and join your own unit. That was your own regiment. And this was the second time I went out wounded, you see, I went straight back to my old mob, the old Buckinghamshire Battalion. Well, this time, I'd been kind enough to be reduced to the ranks, so I've got no stripes. And I asked the officer, could I go back and join them again, see? Oh no, he said, certainly not. He said, it's only NCOs have that privilege. I thought, bugger. And I couldn't go. Well now, after I had that CB, because you couldn't leave the camp, CB, report every hour to the guard room. Couldn't go out, couldn't go down to Le Havre and have a drink, nothing at all. And at night time, you'd perhaps have to go and do 2 hours down in the docks unloading ships. Well, that really done me a good turn, because I hadn't got a mate, I hadn't got a fella, I hadn't got a friend, not that I knew. And I was down there working one night, and there was some other chap there on the same stunt as I was, doing CB, and me and him sort of had a natter, and I looked, he got a gold stripe on his sleeve. That meant he'd been wounded once. Well, I'd got 2 gold stripes on mine, wounded twice. So I said to him, I said, what are you doing? What do you got? He said, 10 days. I said, ah. I said, so why? I said, what did you get it for? Oh, he said, I told one of them buggers up there what I thought of him, one of them yellow bellies. I said, oh, well, I said, that's the going pay for this job. Then evidently I got the same. Well, time went on and finished me 10 days and carried on still learning how to turn right and turn left. Well, I kept my mouth shut after that. Eventually the time came. They lined you all up and then ticked you off or counted you out in batches. If there was 300 or 400 of you lined up, then they'd go along and perhaps tick all 50 of you, and then they'd just tick that lot all 50. Now this 50 will go to the Lancashire Fusiliers, that sort of thing. Then they'd go count along the next 50 Irish Guards or somebody, or Scots regiment, any regiment. And when they ticked our lot off, the chap stood next to me, so we became mates. Stood next to me, they ticked us off, and when they were ticking, I said to them, I was wondering, where the hell are we going? Hope they don't put us in Indian regiment. And when they finished, he said, all right, you lot, Oxford and Bucks Light Infantry. I thought, oh, well, that'd be all right, might find somebody we know. And that's how I got in the Oxford and Bucks Light Infantry. The 5th Battalion it was, and rigged us up then with cap badges, the old bugle, and shoulder, Oxford and Bucks, Light Infantry on your shoulder, rigged us all out and got us prepared for going to the front. Well, they loaded us all up into a train and they ran us up to Arras, just behind Arras. Well, now that, we was all issued out then to the different regiment that we was assigned to, and then began fairly intensive training and lectures. Now we was told, wasn't told the date of course, but we was told and drummed into us that that was going to be the second Battle of Arras. And I'll tell you now, of course, that was to be on the 3rd of May 1917. Well, now, there was supposed to be, well, there was, I suppose, six divisions. That's 20,000 in a division. That's six, twice, 120,000 troops all told. That was right, 120,000 going into the Battle of Arras. And he said there would be five divisions, we were told this, there would be five divisions in the attack. And one division would follow through, we were supposed to break through the front line, second line, and clear the Germans all out of the trenches. And then the other division would come straight in and take over from us. But all hell, there was nothing like that. Now that we were told all that, all the details, had intensive training, even had range firing, so that everybody had to prove that they could use a rifle, I suppose. Of course they could without all that, but we had to go through even range firing again behind the lines. And then eventually we moved into Arras itself. That was a large city, and it was packed from one end to the other with troops. Cellars, houses, everywhere were packed with troops. And we were only there about a couple of days in Arras, and then we moved out. Our regiment, I'm talking of my own regiment now, the Oxford and Bucks, we moved out for perhaps a couple of miles or so out of Arras. We went along a road which ran almost parallel with the trenches, but it was a mile or two behind. And as you went along this road, wherever there was a bit of a hollow, a clump of trees, or some bushes somewhere, you could all see all the artillery guns sticking out, all packed everywhere, and by the side of the guns were stacks of shells like miniature A-rigs, almost wheel to wheel as you went along, you could see them. And previously, early on, we were told that German prisoners, when they were captured, they said it was hell let loose, a British barrage, that it was terrifying. Well, I'll tell you that later on, I was in one. But that's how they were stacked. Eventually, we came to sort of the largest hollow, quite a large hollow at the side of the road, and Air Company went into that, and well, the whole battalion did, because they were very close. It was sort of a slope in the ground, and the whole of our battalion settled down in that, and we stayed there a day or two. And the old colonel and that, he'd come along, and captains would give you lectures and so forth. But finally the day came. That was the 2nd of May 1917. The orders came then. Everybody, if you wanted to do any letter writing, do it straight away, right home. Cut a long story short, you might not go back again, or leave it at that. So, of course, we wrote letters home. Then, pack all your kit up, your great coat, pack that away. They sent your kit bag up, pack your great coat, everything. Even your cap, yeah, pack the cap in. All we had left was just tunic, trousers, boots, and then webbing equipment. And you were loaded up like a pack mule with that. 120 rounds of ammunition, a Mills' bomb, one in each pocket, rifle, bayonet, and then anything they wanted carrying beside that, you had to carry that. Well, it got then towards tea time. They gave us a blooming good tea, a good feed. Put some rum in the tea, above all things, cheered us up. And then they called us all together. The colonel give us his final blessing. What you've got to do, wish you all the best of luck. Now he said, remember this, and I never forgot it either afterwards. Remember this, don't stop until you get to Berlin. And not only that, he said, don't bother to take prisoners. Don't bother with them. I thought, well, that was the final order before we went up the front. Then when it got dark, we slowly made our way up to the front line. I can't remember exactly, but I should say it must have been quite 3/4 of a mile from where we were then to the front trenches. And on the way there, you had to go along a railway cutting, rather steep railway cutting, and that run direct opposite the German lines. And often the Germans would send a load of shells into that line on spec in case there was anyone relieving, which they did do, and we lost quite a lot of casualties previous to that going up this railway line. But anyway, on this particular night, there wasn't a shot fired, there wasn't a shell fired. It was all quiet, and we slowly went up until we got into air trenches. And we were packed in like sardines. All the others were there, different regiments all along the front line. Well, our line, I don't know how long our bit stretched, because we were packed shoulder to shoulder in it. And so we settled down in there, ready for the battle the next day. Now, during the night, the cooks came along. And that'd be early hours of the morning. Early hours of the morning, the cooks came along. How the hell they got up there, I don't know. And they brought us all steaming hot tea. And, well, there must have been half of it rum, I should think, but all that went down beautiful. Give you lovely feelings, made you quite happy. But the strange thing about it was this. We stood there all night long in the trenches, and no one hardly spoke a blooming word. You was quiet. You just stood there smoking as though you was in a pub at home. No thought of a battle at all. I don't know why it was, but the officer, he would occasionally walk along the trench and just see if you was all right, and I'll tell you what he done to me. Now I think of it, me and my old mate, as I'd paired up with, when he got to us too, he saw we'd got wound stripes, so he could see we was what they call old soldiers. So he said to me, he said, oh, he said, I want you to join the machine gun section. I said, well, I don't know anything about a machine gun at all. He said, that don't matter, it's not necessary. He said, I want you and your mate to carry ammunition for them. He said, so you'll be having a man, he said. He said, you won't have any handling of the gun, whatever. So you'll be having to manage that. Well, now, I just feel the old clock, my old blind clock, I feel that with my fingers. Oh hell, it's me half hour's up. Yeah, that'll be the end of the half hour tag. Well now, all being well, tomorrow night, I'll take you through that battle as it happened, and explain it in detail as I go through it. And following that, then I'll start and tell you about a prisoner of war life. Because to me, well, to anyone, it was unique to be taken prisoner of war in a battle such as that, to be taken alone. Often you was taken in small batches or rounded up and put together in batches, but in my case I was taken completely alone, and was a long time after I was captured, or a long time, or a day or two before I actually arrived amongst any of the other prisoners. But still, I'll tell you all about that later. But tomorrow, I'll take you through that battle, all being well.